Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 12th day of October, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I guess the only way we can start things off today is we try to wrap up the idiocy and outright insanity that is happening not only around the United States, but around the world. We'll start with a bunch of amazing and, well, downright unbelievable coincidences. Or are they? I mean, really? Take California, please. And I guess I shouldn't be using that old joke anymore, because it looks like China fully intends to, with the cooperation of the communist left coast. They've got emergencies galore there, power-related and otherwise. But hey, how's this for an irony and a coincidence? They caused them. We'll get back to that in just a second, but first, another amazing coincidence. At the very same time, one of the biggest massive snowstorms and cold fronts in memory is making its way across the northern Rockies and into the plains. In Denver, for example, Wednesday's high temperature was 83 degrees. Thursday saw the upper 70s, but overnight, as the front came through, it dropped to 20, officially making that 63-degree change the city's largest October temperature drop on record. And they got about 7 inches of snow along with it, as the massive and historic winter storm, in October, is bringing freezing temperatures from northern Arizona into Minnesota, and further devastation to a harvest season that was already looking downright disastrous. No doubt about it, though, California's woes were self-imposed. Here's a headline from far enough away that it's arguably not quite as hysterical. The Daily Mail says, "In the dark, outraged Californians scramble to get supplies as the PG&E power cutoff is expected to affect some 2 million people, closing schools, shuttering businesses, overwhelming roadways, and of course, inspiring states of emergency, along with curfews in several counties." Pacific Gas and Electric, it says, PG&E, California's biggest power utility, cut power for an estimated 2 million people, that's 800,000 separate homes and customers, on Wednesday, continuing into Thursday, in the largest effort in the state's history, they say, to allegedly, at least, and are you buying this, prevent wildfires caused by windblown power lines. Trouble is, it hasn't worked. They got some fires anyway. But they got a whole lot of people really upset in what some of us suggest looks a lot more like a beta test. And of course, as to the real reasons, the mind boggles, than an idiotic attempt to prevent forest fires. PG&E, the story continues, planned to shut off power in 34 northern and central California counties, affecting between 1 and 2 million people. But the sudden announcement, which came after a couple of years of firestorms ravaging parts of California, forcing PG&E into bankruptcy, has left residents unimpressed, to put it mildly, very mildly. And quite frankly, folks, the story doesn't even mention the incredible idiocy of their communist state government, which seems to do everything they possibly can not to improve the situation, but make it worse. From undermining infrastructure, like dams, to deliberately shutting down amateur radio services and repeaters in the mountains and forest areas that have a long history of providing invaluable backup communications in the affected areas. We can't have people being able to communicate about what's going on now, can we? And locals are making observations like this. Joseph Pokorsky, retiree in Sonoma, said, quote, "It's unreasonable. There's no wind. It's nothing. There's no reason why they should shut the power off. They're closing everything down so they don't get sued. They don't trim the trees, so we suffer." Unquote. In spite of the so-called preventive measures, however, there are a couple of fires going, says another piece from the Daily Mail. Firefighters are battling flames near power lines on San Bruno Mountain, despite electricity being cut off for about 2 million people in a bid to prevent exactly that. Video of the area shows a helicopter dumping water on flames. It's unclear, says the Daily Mail, if the electrical equipment near the blaze had been shut off. And PG&E officials, say it with me, folks, didn't immediately return a message seeking comment. There's another one underway as well, about 50 miles east of Los Angeles in San Bernardino County. Meanwhile, like in any good beta test, I guess, officials are tracking the pre-cutoff panic. California residents in potential cutoff zones, says one of the parts of the story here, rush to local gas stations, hardware stores, and the like to stock up on gas and other items like flashlights before the preventive measure went into effect. Oh, and I saw another story yesterday that said Tesla owners got an emergency message from the manufacturer saying, quick, charge your Tesla now or be stranded real soon. I guess you could call that a message to the not as wise. Generators, too, were dwindling and nearly impossible to find. And ironically, in a number of the affected areas, they're even outlawed by the wonderful local communist municipalities, because it's politically incorrect and we don't want to hear the noise. But arguably the most tragic comic headline comes from Zero Hedge. Yeah, one of your host's favorites. And it says this: California's being hit by a dual shock. L.A. gas prices spike above $5, while residents learn that... I hope you're sitting down, folks, and we've talked about this before on this show, since your host has an electronic engineering background. As residents learn that solar panels, well, at least the politically correct kind, don't work during blackouts. Millions of Californians, begins this story, may have just suffered an unprecedented induced blackout by the state's largest and bankrupt utility, PG&E, just so it isn't blamed for starting even more fires, causing it to go even more bankrupt, but at least the price of gas is soaring, with some L.A. gas stations now charging more than $5 a gallon. The gas price spike started last month after Saudi Arabian oil production facilities were attacked. Hey, we haven't gone to war yet over that. And accelerated after three Los Angeles area refineries slowed or halted production due to maintenance issues. That happens in a communist state. And no imported gasoline was available to make up for the shortfall. Ditto. According to the Automobile Club of California... And the shortage was made even worse after local refineries were forced to cut back production of summer blend gasoline in anticipation of the mandated switchover to winter blend beginning November 1st. But wait, there's more. America's most, quote, environmentally conscious or subconscious state got a harsh lesson in electrical engineering this week when many of the tens of thousands of people hit by the blackout learned the hard way that politically correct mandated solar installations connected to the grid don't keep the lights on during a power outage. Well, folks, what they really got was a harsh lesson in engineering by bureaucrats and various fatwas associated with grid-connected solar systems. Not that they couldn't, folks. It's that they're mandated and designed not to. And it's even more than not having local batteries available, even though they'll tell you it's all about safety. But some of us suggest there might just be a hidden motive, because if you really cared, we could design them to be switched offline and safe so that they don't re-energize local power lines. But that would be too complicated of a solution for civic-minded communists, who much prefer to mandate the idiotic and simple, while they subsidize losing propositions and systems that are utterly useless when they're needed most, especially when it sets the ignorant peons up for what they know they've got planned. Which leads your host to an observation that I've made before, but I think is particularly apropos today. Sometimes you just have to step back and ask the question, are these people really, truly this stupid? Yeah, I know they're California communists and government bureaucrats, so they're clearly the worst of the very worst. But even so, can a major industry and an entire state really be this stupid? Or is there actually an obvious, hidden, but not so well anymore agenda at play here? Arguably going even beyond yet another beta test. Let's do a quick review. They destroy major dams and infrastructure ahead of an extended drought, followed by incredible fires and huge losses of life and property. And in the process, their communist agenda basically destroys one of the most productive farming regions in the entire world. Immediately before, and here's an amazing coincidence, oh, who could have planned this, one of the biggest agricultural disasters in the Midwest in U.S. history, all of which tends to suggest incredible major food price inflation ahead. But wait, there's more. They sell out the biggest entertainment and arguably propaganda enterprise in the world, Hollywood and the Left Coast, to none other than the communist Chinese, along with ports like Long Beach, and yeah, there's news on that front too, almost like they're planning for a future communist Chinese invasion and setting the stage. And if that seems too far-fetched, consider all the numbers of sanctuary cities and the welcome mats set out for invaders from the south to boot. And ponder the kind of effort it takes to turn some of the world's most beautiful, once upon a time, cities, like San Francisco, into a needle, drug, and feces-infested cesspool, along with rodent-infested, disease-ridden L.A. Could any entire state really be that absolutely brainless? Or is there something else at work here? And just to throw one more log on the fire, I've mentioned this before, but it certainly bears repeating. You take a long-standing group of technically savvy individuals willing to pitch in during civic emergencies and communications failures, like the amateur radio community, and all of their mountain and rural area repeaters, and tell them, nah, No thanks. Not like we're going to have fires or anything, or any other kind of problems. We don't want you providing backup communications in the event that, well, maybe like we've got planned, the entire power grid, and along with it, the cell phone network, goes down. Now, when this one happens, we don't want anybody actually being able to communicate over longer distances and tell the peons exactly what we're doing. Doesn't that just stink to high heaven? And another major front of the not-so-well-hidden-anymore civil war, or is it an external invasion, Judicial Watch tells us that a long-term deal sealed by the Obama regime allowed a Chinese communist company to set up and control the second busiest container port in the United States, we've talked about this for a long time, in Long Beach. But, says JW, in an unreported Trump administration victory, or at least a partial victory, the communists are out after a drawn-out national security review finally forced a unit of China-based Costco Shipping Holdings companies, that's not the same as the Costco Warehouse Wholesalers, which has a T in the name anyway, this one is the China Orient Overseas Container Line, to sell their cherished container terminal business, which imports a whole bunch of stuff into the United States on the left coast. It all started with a 40-year container terminal lease between the port of Long Beach in Southern California and Hong Kong, which the Obama regime proudly signed in 2012, giving China control of America's second-largest container port behind nearby port of Los Angeles. But one of the Trump administration's first big moves was to get the communists out of the port of Long Beach. Okay, the Chinese communists anyway. And after a national security review and federal intervention, the Long Beach terminal business, which handles millions of containers annually, is finally being sold now to an Australian company called Macquarie Infrastructure Partners, and that essentially kills China's decades-long contract via the Obama regime. A deal which Judicial Watch suggests, and I would agree, never should have been signed in the first place, considering the facility's size, significance, and the obvious national security issues associated with control by a hostile foreign government. And no, we're talking about China rather than just communist California. And concludes Judicial Watch, removing the communist Chinese from this essential port is a tremendous feat and a huge victory for U.S. national security, even though other stories have pointed out, Al, it's not a done deal yet. The Chinese still have some concessions and the ability to continue, well, a transition period to simplify a bunch of complex arrangements. But in any case, the only coverage, they say, of the finalized transfer is found in the Long Beach local newspaper, which published a brief article omitting important background information about the Trump administration's work to take back the terminal from the communists. And none of this is surprising, given that the media is consumed with the latest impeach, impeach, impeach mantra, this time based on the bogus Ukraine whistleblower. So we're there, and let's recap the latest moves on that front of the Cold Civil War already in progress. The so-called impeachment inquiry, which isn't an actual inquiry at all, because there are no official subpoenas. But you're not to be faulted, said Andrew McCarthy for The Hill, if you think that a formal inquest is underway, because that's the way the lying press is talking about it, and that some kind of legal process has been issued. This is hype, designed to get the gullible, with the cooperation of the willing lapdog press, to actually believe something legal or even constitutional is actually going on here, when the opposite is truly the case, and Giuliani's pointing that out. Writes McCarthy, what's portrayed as a so-called impeachment inquiry is actually just a made-for-cable TV political soap opera, because the House of Representatives is not conducting a formal impeachment inquiry. To the contrary, it's congressional Democrats who are conducting their 2020 political campaign, and the House hasn't voted as a body to authorize anything of the sort, like an impeachment inquiry. What we have, he says, are partisan theatrics, proceeding with the imprimatur of the Speaker for the Criminals, Nancy Pelosi, raising the profile of whatever's going on, but not the legality thereof. Which brings me next to the letter written by the White House and its legal staff and sent to House Speaker Nutcase Nancy Pelosi and other top Democrats saying they would not cooperate with their so-called inquiry. White House counsel Pat Cipollone in his letter said Trump and other members of the administration, quote, cannot participate in your partisan and unconstitutional inquiry under these circumstances, and went on to say the following. And listen carefully to this stuff, folks. As you know, you've designed and implemented your inquiry in a manner that violates fundamental fairness and constitutionally mandated due process. Ponder that for a second. We'll come back to that term. For example, he said, you've denied the president the right to cross-examine witnesses, to call witnesses, to receive transcripts of testimony, to have access to evidence, to have counsel present, and many other basic rights guaranteed to all Americans. Full stop. Well, that is, unless you remember that this same president said, when it comes to your God-given constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms, we will, quote, take the guns first and worry about due process later. So what are we seeing now, folks? Impeach first, worry about due process later. Ever heard of the biblical iron law that you reap what you sow, Mr. President? Who knows? Maybe he'll see things a bit differently from here on out. I'm glad he's finally at least awakened to the fact that due process might just have important reasons for existing and being codified in that Constitution. Anyway, continues the House counsel, you've conducted your proceedings in secret, you've violated civil liberties and the separation of powers by threatening executive branch officials, claiming you'll seek to punish those who seek to exercise fundamental constitutional rights and prerogatives, and he writes correctly, all of this violates the Constitution, the rule of law, and every past precedent. And your host can't help but think, gee, we've been seeing a whole hell of a lot of that lately, haven't we? Which inclines your host to back up and connect some dots that started over the last weekend and really accelerated by Sunday into Monday. The United States military receives deployment orders within the United States to assist civil authorities, is the general summary. Citing the Homeland, said one of them, United States Marine Reserve units are activated for, quote, emergency within the United States, which will come with little warning, and then cites threats within the homeland, including pretty clearly against the White House itself. Mike Adams, by Sunday, summarized the churn on this story this way. Breaking news update concerning a directive involving the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve units via MARADMINS number 550/19, signed October 3, 2019, authorized by Brigadier General Daniel L. Shipley, Director, Manpower Plans and Policy. So, multiple sources behind the original story, and no shortage of disinformation to follow. Basically, it was canceled. No, it wasn't canceled. It's going to happen. No, it's probably not. But in any case, this new order, says Adams, replaces a whole lot of previous orders, reestablishing the urgency of the situation, which later events in the week did nothing to minimize. Note, says Adams, we've got open talk of arrests and impeachment regardless of what the Constitution might say. Even Hitler herself again wants to come back from the dead and play dictator. And, of course, with the IG's FISA abuse report set to drop real soon now, and it has been for quite a while, but now they're saying, well, within the next couple of weeks anyway, it looks like there's panic in the deep state and things are truly coming to a head. Essentially boiling down to either President Trump will imprison a whole bunch of outright traitors and open criminals, or he and his buds will all go to prison instead. Either way, though, it looks like Civil War II is certainly still on track. PBS, the Politburo bastion of scatology, kowtowed again to the crooked one this week as the president refers to his increasingly probable far-left opponent in 2020 as well, having her on to throw some softballs and help spread the manure. One easy example of which involved reading a tweet from the president about crooked Hitlery, in which he again mentioned her FBI-enabled criminality in committing some 33,000 or so email felonies. And her response, although of course PBS took absolutely no notice of it, was downright delusional. Take a listen to this, and we'll stop during the process to point out the incredible lies, since PBS isn't about to. So first, those 33,000 emails, for which anyone else not under deep state protection would already be wearing an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, you know, it truly is remarkable how obsessed he remains with me. But this latest tweet is, typical of him. Nothing has been more examined and looked at than my emails. We all know that.
Well, unless you count a whole litany of things, from the bogus Steele dossier to the fake whistleblower. And as Hitler has no doubt gloated about ever since, it's really hard to look at things once they've been bleach-bitted and the hard drive's destroyed. But speaking of transference, and particularly the lying and delusional part, listen to how she keeps right on rolling into this whopper.
So he's either lying or delusional, or both. There was no subpoena, as he says in a tweet this morning.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Whoa, did you hear that? As the All News Pipeline points out, even left-leaning PolitiFact gets this one right, debunking that whopper with a timeline showing not only that there was a subpoena on March 4th of 2015 from the Benghazi investigation in Congress, but that she feloniously deleted those emails after she received it, knowing darn well she was supposed to pony them up. So she knows she's lying, but when it comes to delusional, buckle your seatbelt.
So he's either lying or delusional, or both. There was no subpoena, as he says in a tweet this morning. So maybe there does need to be a rematch. I mean, obviously, I can beat him again.
Again? Like she won the first time? I guess unless you count little trivialities, like the constitutional process of an actual presidential election. I think what she's really saying here is, having learned from our mistakes, next time we'll do a better job of rigging the election.
So maybe there does need to be a rematch. I mean, obviously, I can beat him again.
Kind of makes you think that when it comes to both crookedness and senility, maybe the Democrats really should stick with creepy, corrupt old Joe Biden. And I guess speaking of delusional criminals running for president, we do have to put this Joe Biden story in. Ed Snowden appeared in an interview on MSNBC with Brian Williams, in which he named both Vice President Joe Biden and then Secretary of State John Kerry, saying that they pressured U.S. allies that would normally protect whistleblowers to deny that protection to him. Obviously, he should have been screaming Allahu Akbar rather than the truth about the NSA. Here's what he had to say about how he ended up in Russia instead.
It was never my intention to end up in Russia. I was going to Latin America, and my final destination was hopefully going to be Ecuador. I applied for asylum in 27 different countries around the world. Traditional U.S. allies, places like France and Germany, places like Norway, that I felt the U.S. government and the American public could be comfortable that was fine for a whistleblower to be in. And yet every time one of these governments got close to opening their doors, the phone would ring. And they're in their foreign ministries. And on the other end of the line would be a very senior American official. It was one of two people, then Secretary of State John Kerry, or then Vice President Joe Biden.
Hey, I know. Maybe Ed should have tried to get somebody to offer a big bribe, like China and Ukraine, to his son. But, of course, in this case, no sale.
And they would say, look, we don't care what the law is. We don't care if you can do this or not. We understand that protecting whistleblowers and granting asylum is a matter of human rights, and you could do this if you want to. But if you protect this man, if you let this guy out of Russia, there will be consequences. We're not going to say what they're going to be, but there will be a response.
Ironically, unlike the response of the United States to literally millions of invaders crossing the southern border. Clearly, just like some whistleblowers are more equal than others, the same goes for certain asylum seekers. And Ed Snowden points that out in kind of an ironic way, too, especially when it comes to Russia, Russia, Russia.
If anything, if the United States government is so concerned about Russia, right, shouldn't they be happy for me to leave? And yet we see they're trying so hard to prevent me from leaving. I would ask you, why is that?
Meanwhile, one of the other liars running for dictator on the Socialist Party ticket, the 99.44% pure white liar, Pocahontas herself, Elizabeth Warren, who seems destined for the VP slot on a Hillary ticket, told the Wall Street Journal she wants to remake capitalism from the ground up, as if she had a clue, said Ms. Shedlock, what capitalism even was. As she talks about her version of a planned command economy, says the journal, businesses are bracing. Many, your host can't help but think, are probably planning a move already to that other bastion of capitalism, communist China, where maybe they think they'll be at least a bit freer. Or if nothing else, we'll have access to slave labor and won't have to worry about pollution controls. Knowing that just like her counterparts, this woman is a liar to her bones, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to this bit of fluff, but your host can't help but think the most telling quote in this whole piece from the journal is this one. Ms. Warren, they say, in laying out her case, has said she is a capitalist to my bones. Wait a minute. She claims she was Native American, too, and we know how that whopper turned out. But the WSJ continued, whereas fellow candidate Bolshevik Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist. And at least you have to admit that's less of a lie. Said Ms. Shedlock, quoting at length from the article, while Warren claims to be capitalist to my bones, you have to ask in what alternative universe, adding, this is seriously scary stuff. I will note merely that most of the left, and that includes, sadly, much of the so-called Republican Party, doesn't have a clue what actual capitalism, much less free market capitalism, really is. No, Pocahontas, it doesn't have to do with who prints the fake money, and thus who pulls the strings. But you're not about to hear anything like that on the Communist News Network. You will hear, though, and we'll continue in just a few minutes.
Counting on you, and I'd rather die on my feet And I think back on all the crap I learned in high school. It's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Call. And given all of the, strange coincidences that really strain credulity when it comes down to saying, nah, they're just stupid people doing stupid things, as is typical for government, particularly of the communist inclination, I suggested in the first segment that sometimes what we see goes well beyond stupid to the point where you have to conclude, nah, it's just plain evil, and maybe insane to boot. I'll start off this segment with a piece from News Wars about a child in Kansas who was charged with a felony for pointing the dreaded finger gun in school. I gotta ask, and at no small risk to myself, would it have been multiple counts if she'd said, bang, bang? A 12-year-old girl was hauled from school in handcuffs and charged with a felony, I'm not kidding, for allegedly pointing her finger and making the shape of a gun at classmates in Overland Park, Kansas. She was arrested on September 18th after the young girl, quote, unlawfully and feloniously communicated a threat to commit violence with the intent to place another in fear, or with the intent to cause the evacuation, lockdown, or disruption in regular ongoing activities at what now sadly passes for, well, public school indoctrination, according to court documents reviewed by the Kansas City Star. And this just gets more and more outright insane. The piece says, while school officials and authorities have reportedly declined to discuss the case, citing, are you ready for this? Privacy laws. Yeah, we still have those. They just don't apply to you, or at airports, or to any of your communications, electronic or otherwise. But still, a source familiar with the events shared them with the Star. Quote, during a class discussion, another student asked the girl, if she could kill five people in the class, who would they be? In response, the girl, allegedly pointed her finger pistol, like the ones many children, well, back when they were real children, used to use playing cops and robbers, unquote. And because of that gesture, the Star was told, the girl was sent first to the principal's office, and the other students involved were also talked to, whereupon the school resource officer recommended that she be arrested, whereupon she was first detained by police, later released to her mother, and has now fled the state. But, she's living in California, for crying out loud, with her grandfather, who says she's afraid for her future and has been advised she could face up to a year in a juvie detention center if convicted. Said her grandfather, Joe Kavanaugh, this seems to have been something that could have been handled at the principal's office. Gee, do you think? But it got completely out of hand. And he said, quote, she was just mouthing off. Adding she has no access to a real firearm, especially not now in California, and never intended to hurt anyone. But maybe after this treatment, folks, she might change her mind. From that insanity, we show next where it obviously leads, via Matt Madden at The Blaze. Is it just possible that anti-constitutional abominations like red flag gun confiscation, so-called laws, might be used by evil minions of Big Brother to do bad things? Well, no, not if we put the proper safeguards in place, say those who couldn't really care less what the Constitution prohibits outright anyway. But it turns out, surprise, 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 they're wrong. As a matter of fact, dead wrong. Case in point, kids as young as age 8 have been issued red flag gun orders in the People's Republic of Florida lately, in spite of the fact they can't even buy a gun until they turn 21 anyway. According to a report via WFTX-TV, the Sunshine State's new confiscation law has been used to take away the gun rights of almost 2,500 people in the formerly free state, and at least 100 of those were children, and according to the investigation, some as young as 8 years old. And despite the fact that so many of those being red flagged are minors, the orders are filed in open court, opening the information up to the public. The mother of one teen, who was ordered to stay away from guns based on the claim of a verbal threat made in a fight at school, said the mother, he doesn't even have a gun. He doesn't even have a BB gun. He doesn't have nothing, but you just can't say the word shoot, unquote. Polk County Judge Bruce Smith attributed the number of orders against children to, quote, the aggressive nature of our sheriff's department, unquote. And evidently, he ain't kidding. In Polk County alone, 20 of the 400 anti-constitutional confiscation orders were issued against children, most of whom didn't have any actual guns anyway. But hey, the point here, said the oath-breaking so-called sheriff, is they want to send a message to parents. Basically, yeah, you're next. You don't have any rights either. And, oh yeah, this is what it's like to grow up in a police state. This fits next, and over the weekend, a lot of stuff like this came out. Here's a piece from Ammoland. Anti-gun so-called attorneys general are now pushing for universal background checks, i.e. an end to the concept of private property, not only for the right to defend yourself against them with firearms, but to feed those firearms with ammunition. They want to turn them into clubs, in other words. And now universal background checks are on their radar to be applied to, of course, ammunition next. We're talking about a dual abomination. It's called H.R. 1705 in the Communist House, S. 1924 in the Socialist Senate, and it proposes to treat all commercial sales of ammunition just like they already unconstitutionally infringe the commercial sale of firearms. Prohibitions on the buying and selling of all other things, of course, without master's permission or mark, follow soon thereafter. Hey, I got a question. Does anybody still think any parts of the Constitution actually still apply? Next today, I want to spend a few minutes on a story that in no small part is important because of the source and the fact that it's a really good journalist who happens to swing from the left. And amazingly, at least in this day and age, while he doesn't hide his opinion and his disdain for President Trump, at least he looks at the facts honestly and objectively. And I'm talking here about Matt Taibbi of the Rolling Stone, whose excellent work I've reported a number of times over the years. Today's piece, courtesy of Zero Hedge as well, is entitled Taibbi Trounces Ukrainegate Protagonist as, quote, an insult to real whistleblowers. Saying, for reasons that he'll explore, the so-called whistleblower probably isn't, but nevertheless, it's still an insult to real whistleblowers to use that term with the Ukraine protagonist. Starting, he says, with the initial headline, the story in the WAPO that allegedly broke on September the 18th about how Trump's communications with foreign leader are part of whistleblower complaint that spurred standoff between spy chief and Congress, say former officials. Well, says Taibbi, the unnamed person at the center of the story sure didn't sound like a whistleblower. Our intelligence community wouldn't wipe its ass with a real whistleblower. Americans, he continues, who've blown the whistle over serious offenses by the federal government, either spend the rest of their lives overseas, like Ed Snowden, end up in jail, like Chelsea Manning, get arrested and ruined financially, like former NSA official Thomas Drake, have their homes raided by FBI, like disabled NSA vet William Benny, or get charged with espionage, like ex-CIA exposer of torture John Kiriakou. It's an insult to all of these people, says Taibbi, and the suffering they've weathered to frame the ball carrier for the Beltway's latest partisan power contest as a whistleblower. Continues the Rolling Stone author, I've met a lot of whistleblowers in both the public and private sector. Many end up broke, living in hotels, defamed, often divorced, and lucky if they have any kind of a job. One I knew got turned out for a waitressing job because her previous employer wouldn't vouch for her, and she had little kids. The common thread, though, in these whistleblower stories is loneliness. Typically, the employer has direct control over any ability they might have to pursue another job in their profession, and many end up reviled as traitors, thieves, and liars. They often discover, after going public, that their loved ones have a limited appetite for sharing the ignominy, and in virtually all cases, they end up having to start over, both personally and professionally. So with that in mind, let's take a look at what we know about the so-called whistleblower in Ukrainegate. He or she is a, quote, CIA officer detailed to the White House. The account is at best partially based on the officer's own experience, made up substantially by information from, quote, more than half a dozen U.S. officials in the private accounts of my colleagues. In other words, it's hearsay, your host notes here. That is, if the still unnamed whistleblower is actually a real person anyway. And he or she was instantly celebrated, this time as a whistleblower, by news networks and major newspapers. And it's that last detail that not only caught the author's eye, but the eye of Kiriakou, a former CIA counterterrorism official who blew the whistle on the agency's torture program, and said, quote, it took me and my lawyers a full year to get the media to stop calling me CIA leaker, John Kiriakou, he says. That's how long it took for me to be called a whistleblower. The contrast does kind of raise eyebrows, doesn't it, folks?
Kiriakou's crime was talking to ABC News and the New York Times about the CIA's torture program. For talking to American journalists about the CIA, the federal government charged Kiriakou with espionage. And while that absurd count was ultimately dropped, he still did 23 months in prison at FCI Loretto in western Pennsylvania. And when Kiriakou first saw the so-called whistleblower complaint, his immediate reaction was to wonder just what kind of CIA officer the person in question was, saying, quote, "If you spend a career in the CIA, you'll see all kinds of subterfuge and lies and crime," he said. "This person went through a whole career, and this is the thing he objects to?" Unquote. So it's fair to wonder, says Taibbi, if this is a one-person effort, because even former CIA official Robert Baer, no friend of Trump, said as much in an early confab on CNN with Brooke Baldwin. And he quotes an extended segment of the interview, but the key part is, you know, "My guess, it's a palace coup that we're seeing here," he said, "against Trump." Which, says Taibbi, sounds about right, because actual whistleblowers are alone. The Ukraine complaint seems to be the work of a group of people supported by significant institutional power, not only in the intelligence community, but in the Democratic Party and the commercial press. Still, he notes, "In this century alone, we've lived through a president lying to get us into a war that just happened to cause hundreds of thousands of deaths and the loss of trillions in public treasure, the deployment of a vast illegal surveillance program, a drone assassination campaign, rendition, torture, extra-legal detention, and other offenses, many of them mass human rights violations. We had whistleblowers telling us about nearly all of these things. And when they came forward, they desperately needed society's help. They didn't get it. Our government, though, didn't just tweet threats at them, but proceeded straight to punishment." So you can kind of see the contrast here, folks, can't you? Bill Benny, he notes, who since lost both his legs, was dragged out of his shower by FBI agents. Jeffrey Sterling, like Kiriakou, was charged with espionage for talking to a reporter, and after conviction, he asked to be imprisoned near his wife in St. Louis, so they sent him to Colorado for 2 years. Others tried to talk to Congress or their inspectors general, only to find out that their communications had been captured and carbon copied to the very agency chiefs they wanted to complain about, including the notorious former CIA chief and current MSNBC contributor, and your host would add, ultimately one of the most notorious traitors in American history, John Brennan. "The current scandal," he writes, putting it in quotes, "is thus a caricature of such episodes. Imagine the mania on the airwaves if Donald Trump were to have his Justice Department arrest the so-called whistleblower and charge him with 35 years worth of offenses, as a previous regime did to Thomas Drake." Trump, incidentally, might still try to do something like this. It's what any autocrat would do, for starters, to mutinying intelligence officials within his own government. That is, your host notes, if he had that kind of power. Trump almost certainly, says Taibbi, isn't going to do that, because the man, he says here, folks, is just too dumb to realize he's the titular commander of an executive branch that's been jailing people for talking too much for over a decade. Now, again, I'll suggest maybe the reason is because he isn't going to be allowed to have actual control of the executive branch, much less the intelligence community. Actually, of course, all of them serve the deep state. And we've seen more and more evidence of that for quite a while now. On the off chance, says Taibbi, that he does try it, don't hold your breath waiting for the news networks to tell you. He's just following the established pattern. In conclusion, says Taibbi, I got a lot of qualms about the impeachment Ukraine gate, beginning with this headline premise of the lone, conscience-stricken defender of democracy arrayed against the mighty Trump. I don't see it. Donald Trump, he says, is a jackass who got elected basically by accident. Well, he wasn't supposed to win. At least Taibbi, too, can see that. Campaigning against a political establishment too blind to its own popularity to see what was coming. He goes on to say that in 2016 we saw a pair of electoral revolts, one on the right, the other on the left, against the cratering popularity of the political elite. And it was the rightist populist revolt that succeeded. He was obviously a bigger fan of Sanders, it would seem. Ukrainegate, to me, though, he says, looks like a continuation of Russiagate, which was a reaction of that defeated political elite to the rightists. And he adds, as if we didn't get it, I don't feel solidarity with either group. And now he says the left is telling us we have to stand up and be countered and get on the impeachment choo-choo against Trump, based on the presupposition that Trump is even worse than the people opposing him, which he says might prove to be true. But if we're talking about the treatment of whistleblowers here, Trump has a long way to go before he even approaches the brutal record of the CIA, NSA, FBI, as well as the cheerleading Washington political establishment. And here, folks, I think he nails it. Trying to hide this is almost certainly just the first in what will prove to be many deceptions by a hardcore insider political movement, resulting in a battle whose subtext is a lot more shadowy and ambiguous than news audiences, and by here I think he means the waste stream, are being led to believe. I think this is an interesting follow-up to that last piece, if for no other reason than it might represent a real whistleblower via a FOIA response. And right up front, I have to point out, I saw this via an aggregator. The actual story comes from Popular Mechanics, and it's dated April of last year, 2018. Under the title, Government Accidentally Releases Documents on Psychoelectric Weapons, they put it in quotes, which were mistakenly sent to a journalist. And your host will suggest it's particularly apropos today, given what we're seeing not only about fake whistleblowers, but about real attempts to control the population, especially with the new 5G and Internet of Things, not to mention the Chinese socialist credit score system, all of which tie together. The government, begins the story, has all kinds of secrets, but only a true conspiracy theorist might suspect that psychoelectric weapons are one of them. That is, unless they've been paying attention, of course. So they continue, it's odd that Muckrock, a news organization that specializes in filing Freedom of Information or FOIA requests with state and federal government bodies, received mysterious documents about mind control, seemingly by accident. Or, your host notes, perhaps because it's obvious, that there just might be somebody with a conscience inside there who knows what happens to whistleblowers. Journalist Curtis Waltman was writing to the Washington State Fusion Center, a joint operation between the Washington State law enforcement and federal government, to request information about Antifa and so-called white supremacist groups, and he got responses to the questions he asked, but also a file entitled EM Effects on Human Body.zip, which contained a whole lot of documents that they reproduced, mostly consisting of pictures labeled with all kinds of interesting things that various types of electromagnetic waves are able to do to people. An outline drawing of a human body had a number of interesting annotations directed to various parts of it, like the head, where one of them says, forced memory blanking and induced erroneous actions, artificial tinnitus pointing to the ears, and forced movement of jaw and clacking of teeth directed to that area. At the central part of the body, it reads, wildly racing heart, without cause. An arrow to the genitals points out, special attention to genital area, itching, forced orgasm, intense pain. While the hands show a note that says, forced precision manipulation of hands, sometimes synced to the forced waking visions. While the legs get this treatment, intensive general pain, or hot needles pushed deeply into flesh sensations. That sounds delightful. Along with a note at the bottom entitled General Effects. Sudden overheating? Does that sound like what 5G can do, folks? They call it a pain ray there. All body pain? Yeah, same thing. Sleep prevention? Forced drop in your tracks? Sleep inducement? Irresistible go here, go there commands? And microwave burns, among other things. The general notation on the drawing says, the first unclassified successful transmission of the human voice directly into the skull of a living person was performed by one Dr. Joseph C. Sharp of the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research in 1974. And the rest of the paper describes other things Big Brother would obviously find quite handy to know about, including the unique bioelectromagnetic field for each human body, which is an electronic signal frequency ID of each object. And you can see how that'd be handy, especially if you can then manipulate them via EM radiation. The story suggests at least some of the images appear to be related to an article in Nexus magazine describing a 1992 lawsuit brought by one John St. Clair Akewi against the NSA, who claimed that the NSA had the ability to, quote, assassinate U.S. citizens covertly or run covert psychological control operations designed to cause subjects to be diagnosed with ill mental health, unquote. And I guess nowadays that'd be especially handy, so you can then come and red flag their guns. While the documents don't appear to be official, And Waltman indicated he had no idea why the documents were included in his FOIA request anyway, or why the government would be holding on to them. The Fusion Center, of course, itself, did refuse any further comment. One more thing your host found interesting, of course, and especially topical nowadays, was a drawing of some cell towers labeled Mass and Individual Remote Mind Control via the Mobile Phone Network and Mobile Phones, and a drawing, too, of a little mobile van labeled Individual Remote Mind Control via Mobile Psychotronic Weapon Carriers, designated as Communications Vehicles. And, well, admittedly, folks, that does date the piece, doesn't it? Because pretty soon now, they won't have to use vehicles at all. Once Big Brother and his public-private partners managed to get 5G into every single home. Or else. But it does again reveal the lie. The effects of these wavelengths on the human body have been studied for a long, long time. And now they're being applied in mass. And finally, if you really want to see a dystopian totalitarian future, imagine linking all of that to a satanic Big Brother with Terminator capability under the direction of a Skynet-like artificial intelligence. Oh, and give control of it to the world's most truly evil corporation to boot. And you know who I mean. This one's called Google Creating a Godlike Artificial Intelligence by Art Moore at WorldNet Daily. When it describes an interview with an ex-engineer from that evil corporation who says that their version of the Manhattan Project will, quote, monitor everything you do. And probably a whole lot of things you haven't even thought about yet, but they know you will. And this former engineer, too, of that evil Gulag Corporation is actually being described, at least by honest media, as a whistleblower. He says, quote, they're trying to create a control grid that captures all the information, video, audio, wherever you're at, streams it back to a centralized data repository, and then this godlike AI is able to figure out what it is that you're doing, who you're associating with, and create a shadow Facebook profile that you don't know exists, but exists for them, unquote. This from Zach Voorhees in an interview Friday with American Family Radio. Voorhees continued saying that Google will be able to, quote, monitor everything you're able to do, your real-time information, who your friends are, who your family members are, everything. And he contends that Gulag is effectively developing something akin to China's socialist credit score system, surprise, surprise, forcing people to conform to politically correct behavior, speech, and, of course, ultimately, thought. Once they install this Chinese-style social credit system, and remember, folks, Gulag is even more buddy-buddy with China, it would seem, than they are with the CIA, so that everything you do is monitored, well, then if you start to do anti-government activities, you become unpersoned online, he said. You have your social media accounts suppressed, your financial instruments start to be canceled, you can no longer take money online. And, of course, ultimately, the intent is that online will be the only way you'll be allowed to buy or sell. And that, of course, as we're already seeing in communist China, requires their permission. And if the name Zach Voorhees sounds familiar, folks, it should, because this is the same former employee of Gulag who went to Project Veritas in late summer and delivered about 950 pages of documents to the Department of Just Us and their antitrust division, saying he came forward because he, quote, saw something dark and nefarious going on with the company, and I realized they were going to not only tamper with the elections, but also use that tampering with the elections to essentially overthrow the United States. And this information, of course, revealed the great big whopping lie that CEO Sundar Pichai told gullible lawmakers when he said, no, no, we couldn't possibly be censoring conservative speech. Your host notes that revelations like this fall on the heels of reports that Gulag had actually claimed a breakthrough in quantum computing technology that would, at minimum, among other things, give them the ability to literally break any encryption currently known to man. And concludes the WorldNet Daily piece, the censorship and continued privacy violations by Google and its various big tech, Big Brother counterparts have been documented at length by current employees, as well as internal documents, recordings, and now lots of former employees to boot. So, add into the mix the ability for them to control, or is it the other way around, a godlike artificial intelligence, and what could possibly go wrong? Speaking of which, I guess we ought to close with a very brief financial note, or two. Repo madness continued, and this week the Fed announced POMO, Permanent Open Market Operations. But don't you dare call it QE4, because they haven't really started to print money in earnest yet. As for the rest of the meltdown status, I'll just summarize it with a couple of notes from the SRS Rocco report.
More black swans arrive, he writes, as U.S. government debt balloons by another $814 billion in just a little over 2 months, while the public yawns. Probably because they've just plain gotten numb to it. There's a message in there somewhere, but I'll leave you with the question, how many of them will actually wake up before it's too late to matter? Answer, don't be among them.